Today's daf in Masechet Yoma, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKadosh, is daf Nun Beis. Can you imagine? This is unbelievable. We just started. And we're on the beginning of the fourth line. So remember what we said before, that we weren't sure in the second Beit HaMikdash exactly where to put the dividing line between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh. And the reason for that, we said, was because in the first Beis HaMikdash, there used to be a wall there. And since the second Beis HaMikdash was higher, and there was no way to build a wall that would just be that one amma thick and be able to have it the current height of the Beis HaMikdash, they needed to put instead curtains. And the question is, since you were not allowed to make any changes in terms of the spaces and the divisions of the spaces, because that was all given by Shmuel ben Evias as a Megillah to David. So where exactly should we put the curtain? So it says that they were not able to determine where exactly the Kedusha of the Traksim was. Now let's look at that and try to figure out how that's possible. Omer Rabbi Natan, Amma Traksim, Lo Hichriu Bo Chachamim Ikelefnim Ikelechutz. They were unable to determine whether to put that Amma towards the front or towards the back. So because of that, they had to make two curtains. Now that is a little bit iffy. What does that mean? Matke Flor Ravina, my time. I don't understand exactly what was it that they were unable to determine. Why? I mean, I understand it says in the pasuk. Now these psukim are the descriptions of the first Beis HaMikdash, and it says over there, Abayit Asher Banah Shlomo LaHashem. So the length of the Beit HaMikdash was 60 amot in length, 20 amot in width, and 30 amot in height. Now, there's also a pasuk that divides the inside, because it says over there, of the 60 amot, it says 40 of the amot, arba'im ba'ama, haya habayit, hu ha-heichal, so that means the 40 amot that was there was the heichal that was lifanai. It was the part that was in the lifnai. It was towards the front. And that means that the area of the heichal, which is the kodesh, not the kodesh HaKadoshim, was 40 amot. And then it says, vilifnei hadvir, within the dvir was the mechitza between the kodesh and the kodesh HaKadoshim, there was an additional 20 amot orech, 20 amot rochav, and 20 amot in height. Now, obviously, the height is a problem here, because a minute ago we quoted the pasuk that said it was 30 amot in height. The Gemara asks this question, and the Gemara answers that it means from the top of the Kruvim that Shlomo HaMelech had put on the floor, they were 10 amot high, and above them was 20 amot. Okay, Rashi says maybe the simple meaning would be that, remember, there was the second story where they had the elevators that would come down for repairs and so on. So maybe it's referring to 20 amot up till the drop ceiling, so to speak, where all of the electrical things were and so on. Okay, but in any event, the point is that you're not sure, apparently, where exactly the mechitza itself was, because it says there was 40 in front, 20 in back. And, okay, where was the single amma of the wall that was between the two? Is that the problem? Lo yadina amma traksin. Imihani esrim v'imihani arba'im. I mean, what makes you think that it was part of either of them? V'dilma lo mihani esrim v'lo mihani arba'im v'chalalam kachashim kotolim lo kachashim. Look, I mean, basically, when we list spaces, we're listing spaces. We're not listing walls within those spaces. So we're talking about the net over here of what space was available inside. What makes you think that we need to account for within those spaces, the space where the wall was built? I'll prove it to you, by the way. If you take a look at every instance where we do have a measurement of the walls, it measures the traksin area as a separate wall, not as part of the space. Here, take a look at this, okay? What about this Mishnah? We got this Mishnah over here in Midot, and the Mishnah says like this. Ha'echal, if the you want to start from the Heichal, let me go through it with you. It was 100 amos by 100 amos, and by 100 amos in height. This is a reference to the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, just to understand what's going on over here, how we had that amount of space. Remember that the space that we described before, first of all, was at the first Beis HaMikdash, but also when we're talking about the building from the outside, the building itself was surrounded by an entire structure called the Yitzia, which was a multi-storied structure that was outside and extended for three stories along the between the outside wall and the inside wall. So there were these rooms that went all the way around with stairwells between them and so on. This added a great amount of space, not to mention the fact that the walls themselves were either 6 or 5 amot wide, which is immense. I mean, these are very, very thick walls. So let's go through the entire building and take a look at how it could possibly have covered that kind of space. So we're going to talk about first from east to west. In other words, we're coming in and we're heading towards the back of the building. So let's think about all the spaces that we have to and all of the walls that we have to cross. Okay. So first of all, we've got that outside area, which is called the Ulam. The Ulam is a porch, but on the side of the Ulam, there was an outside wall. Then there was this big opening. You got in. There were 11 amot of empty space in the porch. Then there was the other wall, which was the wall of the Heichal, and that was where you had the main doors that would open up into the Heichal. So now, starting from the outside of the Ulam, the wall itself of the Ulam, the outside wall, was 5 amot thick. Then you had the porch itself, empty space, was another 11 amot. And then you had the wall of the Heichal. The wall of the Heichal was 6 amot thick. Okay, then you get into the Heichal, and in the second Beis HaMikdash, you have 40 amot of Heichal itself. So that gives you yet the additional 40 amas. And then take a look at this. And then came 1 ama of Troxim. Then came another 20 amas of the Beis Kodesh HaKodeshim. Now, come on. That means that the Troxim was not part, not of the 20 and not of the 40. And note how the relationship between the spaces remained the same from the very beginning, whether you're talking about the Mishkan, the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, it's the same proportion. You have double the space in the Heichal area than you have in the Kodesh HaKodashim area, you know, so whether it's 20 to 10 or whether it's over here, the 40 to 20, fine. The Megillah maintained the basic ideas of the Parshiot and Shmos that describe the building of the Mishkan. But meanwhile, what I'm trying to show you is that the Troxim was definitely not part of the spaces at all. And therefore, that couldn't have been your question, where to put it, right? Let's continue on just to get to the 100 amas. So then we've got another 20 amas of the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. Then you've got the back wall of the Heichal, the inside wall. That was 6 amas thick. Then you entered into the chamber that was beyond that, and that was towards the west. In other words, as if you cut through the wall, there was no real opening there. But if you would cut through the wall, you would get into one of the ta'im. The ta'im were the little rooms that surrounded the Beis HaMikdash on three stories. And the ta itself was sheish. And then the wall of the ta, between the back of the ta and the outside of the building, was an additional 5, which adds up to a full 100 amos, okay? But anyway, look, we're not interested right now in learning midos, but what's important to me is that you see clearly that the ama troxin was its own ama, was not part, not of the inside, not of the outside, so I don't understand what you're saying, that you didn't know where to put it. It's obvious where to put it. Says the Gemara, yes, of course we knew where to put it. That's not the question. The question is, if we're going to substitute for a wall, which we cannot make, we're going to substitute a curtain, okay? Where do we put the curtain? Because if the thickness of the wall was viewed in terms of the Kedusha, what Kedusha space was it part of? Was the wall of the Troxim part of the Kodesh HaKodashim, or was the wall of the Troxim the end of the Kodesh, of the Heichal? Now, if we're going to substitute a curtain, then we've got to put the curtain at the dividing point, right? So then do we put the curtain at the beginning of the 20 of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, at the end of the Heichal space? Or do we put it at the beginning of one Amah away from the 20, because it was always part, its space was always part of the Kiddush of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? I don't know where to put it. Therefore, I put up two parochets, okay? One of them is at the end of the 40. That means that maybe this was the end of the Heichal space. Maybe it wasn't. If it wasn't, I need to have that space then to be part of the Heichal. Then I put another one at the beginning of the 20, because maybe that's where the end of the Heichal was and the beginning of the Kodesh HaKadoshim was. That's the point. So it's the Kedusha, the din of the Kedusha. Was it the din of Kodesh or was it Kodesh Kadosh? That's the question. They weren't sure whether it was Lifnim or it was Kelochutz. And because of that, we had to actually make two of them. Now that you understand, let me explain to you how this ties into the actual reading of the Pesukim, because Hainu D'Omer Rabbi Yochanan, this is basically the question that you just defined. You said this was the question that they had at the time of the Binyan, and they were not able to define properly where to put the tracks. In modern times, we had that question about how to read the Pesuk, and that was Yosef Ishutzel, and he asked it like this. He said, how do I read the Pesuk? Udvir betoch habayit mipnima heichin. So Shlomo HaMelech prepared from the dvir. Now the dvir itself is the actual mechitza. In the inside, mipnima heichin letitain sham et aron brit Hashem. Now there's two ways to read that pasuk. We could read that the dvir betoch habayit was made mipnima, or we could read there was the dvir betoch habayit and then mipnima to it heichin letitain sham et aron brit Hashem. So that's the question. Was the way to read the Pasuk, Niboilo, Heichika Amakro, what did the Pasuk mean? Did the Pasuk mean, Udvir betoch habayit mipnima hechin letitain sham? So that would mean that there was a dvir, and then mipnima to that dvir, there was a place hechin letitain sham the orain, but not that the dvir was mipnima. That there was a dvir that began the area of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the pnima of the bayit, and that meant that the partition was part of the Kodesh HaKodeshim kedusha, so that the Kodesh HaKodeshim was 20 amot of space and one amah of wall. And then why was that area made? Hichin for the Aron Brit Hashem. So that suffix of Yosef Ishutzel is basically the suffix apparently that they had when they were actually building the Beis HaMikdash, and they had to substitute the parochot, and they didn't know where to put it. So that's how we ended up with the two parochot with the Amah in between, which was basically the Amah of the traction. Hey, hold on a second, says Gemara. You're telling me that Yosef Ishutzel was the one who didn't know how to read that pasuk? That's not possible. Because Yosef Ishutzel is actually the person who went out to define all of the psukim in the Torah that were not definable grammatically. In other words, it wasn't clear where we were meant to put the comma. And a comma makes all the difference. And actually, sometimes we weren't even sure where to put the period. So Umim is Safkale, and the problem is that in his list of the psukim that were not determinable, he did not include this pasuk. And so how could he not be sure about this pasuk? He's as if he said, this is one pasuk I don't worry about. I know how to read this pasuk. So umim is afkale, v'atanya. Isi ben Yehuda omer. Now it's going to turn out that Isi ben Yehuda was actually Yosef Ishutzel, as we're going to see. So Isi ben Yehuda omer. There are five and only five mikraot in the entire Torah that ein lehem echreya, that there is no way to define clearly where to put a comma or a period. And they are, and they definitely do not include this particular one. They are Se'et, Mishukadim, Machar, Arur, and Kam. Now, we know what those psukim are. So Se'et, that's going back to Kain. It says over there, halo im tetiv se'et v'im lo tetiv lepetach hatat rovetz, right? Now, how do I read that? Do I read that Hello, im teitiv, then se'et. Se'et is a lashon of no se'avon. So then you will be forgiven if you are teitiv. Or, hello, im teitiv, it's up to you. But you are going to be damned, se'et im lo teitiv. So then we also, because we know that the word se'et is also a word for nisiyat avon. Avono yisah adamahu, right? So then it might be saying, look, you've got an opportunity to be teitiv, but you're going to be se'et im lo teitiv. Don't know how to read that. Okay, the other pasuk I don't know how to read. What about the pasuk that says, Bobby, please mute yourself. The arba'a gvi'im mishukadim kaftorea ufracheha. Do I read that arba'a gvi'im were mishukadim, not the kaftorea ufracheha? Or do I read it arba'a gvi'im and the mishukadim were on the kaftorea ufracheha? Not sure. Machar. It says, say hilachem ba'amalek, machar anochi nitzav. How do we read that? Machar anochi nitzav? Or say hilachem ba'amalek, machar, and I will be nitzav. So there's two ways of reading it. I might be telling Yeshua, go out and fight them right now. You don't need my tefillas right now. Believe me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. Tomorrow, I'm going to go out and daven. Not sure how to read that. How about b'ritzonam akrushor? Arur apam ki az. So is that b'ritzonam akru shor arur, referring to the shore of Shechem, not to Yosef HaTzadik, and Shechem is Knan and Arur Knan. So b'ritzonam akru shor arur, and then apam was az, but I wasn't cursing apam. Not sure how to read that either. How about the pasuk said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hincha shochev im avotecha vekam ha'am hazeh v'zanu acharei. How do I read that? Hincha shochev im avotecha vekam. You are about to die and you will be brought back to life, which would mean a remes to tchiyat hamitim. Or is it Hincha shochev im avotecha, you are about to die, and after your death, vekam ha'am hazeh, people will come, they will get up and they will worship Avodah Zarah. So what do you say? How do we look at this? How come he doesn't include this pasuk? Now you'll say, okay, but that's easy ben Yehuda. We're talking about Utsal Yosef ish Utsal, right? I'm wrong, because Vatanya, the Braita said that you should know Yosef ish Utsal has got a lot of different identities. He's known at times as Yosef HaBavli, what we've met many times. He is called Isi ben Yehuda, which we just met. He's called Isi ben Gur Aryeh. He's called Isi ben Gamliel. He's called Isi ben Mahalalel. And his original name was Isi ben Akiva, was Shmo. He was actually one of the Ents. And you know, to tell you all of his names would take a very long time. Well, we're just giving you a brief description. In any event, how could Yosef Ish Hutzal be misupak about a pasuk that Isi ben Yehuda, who is an alter ego, was not misupak about, huh? No, says the Gemara. He was only listing five psukim in the Torah, Chamisha Chum She Torah. He wasn't saying that some total of psukim about which in the entire Tanakh he doesn't know. And this pasuk that we were talking about before, that comes from the story of Nelochim, of the Binyan of Beit HaMikdash. Maybe there were a lot of other psukim. He wasn't referring to them. So b'diorayta leka, but in the Nevi, there may be other psukim. Wait, is it really true that b'diorayta, there were only five? What about Rav Chisda, who pointed out that we don't know how to read the pasuk of Vayishlach et na'arei v'nei Yisrael v'yalu olot v'yizbechu zivachim shlamim parim? Do we read that? Vayishlach et na'arei v'nei Yisrael v'yalu olot. And then you're supposed to understand that the olot were kvasim. And then continue the next part of the pasuk, vayizbechu zvachim shlamim parim. So that the word parim only goes on the last part of the pasuk, which were the shlamim. Or maybe the entire pasuk is meant to be read without a stop in the middle as the parim going on both of them. So vayalu olot kvasim parim. And that would make a big difference about whether we put an etnachta there or whether we put a gerash there. Says the Gemara, yeah, okay, fine. You're right. Rav Chisda did not know how to read that pasuk, but Isi ben Yehuda did. So I don't know. I mean, but for some reason, if he's not including it, then he was able to be machria, whether to read it parim on both or to read one of them and with the assertion of kvasim. Okay, great. So that concludes the Gemara on that Mishnah. And now he's up to the curtain. We've been talking about the approach to the curtain. The machlokas about the approach. Was he going diagonally towards the north, diagonally to the south? Or was he going along the wall of the north so that he was facing the opening, according to Rabbi Yossi, the entire time? Now, moving back to the sheet of the Rabbanan that he was heading towards the south, let's continue after some very important introductory words.
A curtain call for Richard. It's a curtain call.
I thought you'd forgotten me.
Hachitzona, the outside curtain, so we automatically know we are not going according to Rabbi Yossi, and we are heading along to the south. Hachitzona, the outside curtain, was prufa min hadarom. It was opened up on the southern south. Remember, it had a little hook that held it open. And the pnimit was open, the inside one was open to the north. The kohen would go into the south, and then would turn right and walk along the in-between. Ma'alar binim, that was that one amma in-between. Until he got to the north, he would turn left, go into the north, and immediately turn left again. So he turned 180 degrees so that he was now facing to the south again. And he would walk along towards his left. Of course, his left hand was brushing against the parochet as he walked south. And until he got to the Oren HaBrit. When he got to the Oren HaBrit, he would put down the machateh between the two badim of the Aron, and then he would take the ketoret and he would pile it up on top of the coals, and the entire inside of the Kodesh HaKodashim would get full of smoke. And that was the end of his avoda, at which point he would walk out. But walking out, he did not turn about. He instead walked out backwards, facing towards the Oren. So Yatza Ubolo Bederach Beit Knisato, he walked out backwards in the way that he had come in. While he is in the Heichal, before he walks out to the Tzibur, he would say a Tfilak Tzara Bebeit Achitzon, but he was careful, Lo Haya Ma'arich Betfilato Shelo La'avit Et Yisrael. He would not say a long tefillah because that would scare everybody after death, because they would be sure that something had happened to him and that the kapora was not achieved. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. Asks the Gemara, the case described in the Mishnah never happened. So what the heck is going on? If we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash, there was no parochet that was proof to the Torah and its Tzafon. There was a traxin. So what the heck is it talking about? And if we're talking about the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Oren HaBrit because it had already been put away by Yoshiyahu. So how in the world do we conflate two completely different eras that are separated by an immense amount of time and pretend that this thing could have actually happened? It never happened. There wasn't a parochet in the Mikdash Rishon. There was the traxin. If we're talking about the Mikdash Sheni, there was no Oren in the Mikdash Sheni because of Atanya. It says in the Braita that from the point of time, Mishenigna Zaron, and we're going to discuss what that point of time is, obviously, because that's the only reason that we're quoting all of this. Mishenigna Zaron, from the time that the Oren HaBrit was put into hiding, Nigneza imo, together with it, was put the tzinsenet haman, where Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take a tzinsenet and put it away as a memory of the man in the midbar. The tzluchit shemen ha-mishcha, the original shemen ha-mishcha, which still was the full 12, the shemen mishcha skedesh zeh, the original 12 lug of the shemen ha-mishcha was still there. That was put aside together with the yorin. The famous makel of Aharon, Shkedea Ufrachea, together with the flowers that had flowered, the almonds that had grown, that was all there on the makel. And as Mersha was told, put that next to the Oren, Laos, they marry. and the Argaz, Shishigru, Plishtim, Doron, Lelohi, Israel, together with that box that contained the golden statues that they had sent, Shnemar, Uklea, Zahav, Asher, Ashivotem, Lo, Asham, Tasimu, Bargaz, Mitzido, they put it next to the Orein, Mushlach, Temoto, Va'alach. And we'll see how we know these things were meant to be there permanently. And here's the part that's important to us. Umi Gunzo, Yoshio Gunzo. So that means that towards the end of the Tkufa, of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Orein was already put away by Yoshio. Mara Ashiganzo, what made him do such a thing? Because remember when they discovered the Sefer Torah that was open in the Heichal, it was open to the Pasuk of Yolecha Shemotcha Vet Malkecha Shetakim Alecha. So he saw right away the horror of those Psukim, that there was going to be a Golus that would be coming and that they would be taken away to Golus. El Goya Shelo Yadata, Atava Votecha, Vavadta Sham Elohim Acherim, Eitz Va'Even. He says that's all we need is for the Orein to be taken with us to Bavel. So he immediately decided, Omad V'Gunzo. We see that he said to the Levim at that time, he said a very strange thing, that if you don't understand what is being discussed, you can't make heads or tails of it. It says, Vayomer l'Leviim amivinim l'kol Yisrael ha'kdoshim la'Hashem, tnu et Aron ha'kodesh b'bayit asher banah Shlomo ben David melech Yisrael. Ein lachem masa b'katef, atayv du et Hashem l'keichem et amo Yisrael. He's only about 500 years late. What's going 400 years? I mean, what in the world is he talking about? He's telling the Levim to bring the Orein into the house that Shlomo HaMelech built 400 years before. It was already brought there. That was the whole ceremony, right? Of the bringing the Orein into the Beis HaMikdash, the Seus, Sharim, Rosh Hashem. But now he's telling the Levim 400 years later, he's telling the Levim, well, you're not going to be carrying the Orein. I think they probably figured it out by now. So this is a nutty pasuk, unless the meaning of the pasuk is that there was a special underground bayit that Shlomo HaMelech had built, which was held in concern from the beginning because he knew Baruch HaKadosh that the bayit was going to be destroyed. And when there was advance warning of the destruction to come, they knew throughout the generations that the Orein was to be hidden inside the place that was originally meant for it, built itself by Shlomo for the time of the hidden period where the Orein would not be exposed. And that was during the entire time of the second Beis HaMikdash. They never brought it back. And what he was saying to them was, as the Gemara, we learned in the Gemara, he was saying to them, listen, guys, I'm telling you that if Chas V'Shalom, we don't get this Orein hidden now, and we're surprised by the Bavlim before we have a chance to hide it, and they take the Orein HaBris to Bavel, Ein lechem masa b'katef. Believe me, you ain't going to have no opportunity to carry it back. It's never coming back. It's all we need. So because of that, you better take it today. And so obviously, there were only certain very special people who knew where the Mokum of the Geniza was. We learned that when somebody noticed that there was a floor, one of the floor tiles was slightly askew, he immediately dropped dead and fine. So this is what happened. So if you're telling me that this is from the time of Yoshio, how in the world does our Mishnah say that the Kohen came out and walked along the curtain to between the Bade Ha'orain? There never were Bade Ha'orain next to that curtain. So what in the world is this supposed to mean? Okay. Before we get to that, however, how do we know that all of the other things that we mentioned were also hidden together with the Orein HaBrit? Each one of them is derived from Gzeirah Shavah from the Pasuk. Because remember, about the Orein, it says, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, Asher Iva'ed Lecha Shavah. By the Tzinzenet HaMan, it says, Tein Shama, Meloha Omer Man. So that is Shama, Shama. That teaches us that the Tzinzenet HaMan needed to be with the Orein at all times. Then by the Tzinzenet HaMan, it says, put the Tzinzenet HaMan, l'mishmeret l'dorotechem. But the tzluchit of Shemen, of the Shemen HaMishcha, it says, that tzluchit, but it says over there, Shemen Mishchat Kodesh, yezel lechem l'dorotechem. So it's the same lashon of Dorot. That teaches us that if the Tzinsenet was there next to the Arla Dorot, so was the Tzulchus of Shem and Amishcha. Now, over there it says Lemishmeret. And it says by the story of Maklo Shel Aharon in the Machlokas with Korach, it says Lemishmeret Laot Livnei Meri. So because of that, we know that the Maklo Shel Aharon had to be there. So Memela, when we say that the Aron was hidden, it clearly was hidden with all of these additional Kalim with it. So how could it be that our Mishnah says that he got up to the Aron? There was no Aron. No, says the Gemara, Mayi Gia La'Aron. That means to the Mokom Ha'Aron. What do you mean the Mokom Ha'Aron? It says, and he put the Machta between the Shnei Habadim. I mean, if it was just the place of the Aron, how is he putting it between the Shnei Habadim that did not exist there? No, Ema Ket Ben Shnei Habadim. That it was in the area that would have been between the two Badei Ha'Aron. Now, obviously, utilizing this type of depiction of the space is purposeful in the sense that even Lahalacha, remember that the Chiyuv of Tefillah today, as is brought by the Shulchan Aruch, is that the person is supposed to see himself standing in exactly that spot, facing the Aron HaBris, when he davens to Hashem, Dalifnei Miata Omeid. So we're actually eliciting that response by describing it that way. As far as the Kohen Gadol was concerned, he saw in his mind the Aron and the Badei Aron that were standing there, even though they were underneath the ground in the Mokom that Shlomo HaMelech had prepared. So it was as if, Kibein Shnei HaBadim. Then it says, Savarat Aktorat Agabi HaGechalim, which is fascinating because remember, we had a machlokas about whether you're supposed to actually pile it on or whether you're supposed to shake it over gently so that it covers the entire area and then burns rapidly. That was a machlokas. Our Mishnah seems to be taking one side of that machloket. So Tanan Kamandi Omer Sovra. Apparently, the Mishnah is going like that Tana. We had two brises before. Okay, now there's a machlokas as well about where you piled it on. Did you pile it on the part of the machate that was closest to you as the Kohen? Or did you pile it on the part of the machate that was far from you and closest to the Aron, I mean the missing Aron, but the Aron that you're seeing in your consciousness, which way was it? So there we have actually also a machlokas. Tani chodat sovra pnima shuchutzalo. So one says that when you start to be sover, you put it on the part that was more inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, towards the Aron, far away from where your hand is. And Tanya Idach, the other Braita, says, Tzovra Chutza, that actually, no, you do the piling on the Ktoret, on the coals, farther away from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the putative Aron, which is Pnima Lo, which is close to him. So I'd explain that. Omer Abaye, I'll explain it. It's machlokas tanoim. Tanoihi. The Omer Abaye, furthermore, you should know that it's very much more reasonable, says Abaye, like the man the Omer who says that you should be tsover closer to the Aron and further away from yourself. Because every single day when you used to bring the Ktoret, so it says in the Mishnah that melamdim oto, we would tell the Kohen who was going to bring it, this is the Mishnah in Tamid, watch out, he's Zahir, be careful when you put on the Ktoret that you don't burn yourself. And lo tatchil mipanecha, don't start the Ktoret in the side where you're standing, because then you'll have to put your arm over the burning Ktoret and you're going to get burned. Shema techaveh. Now, I understand that that is not necessarily relevant here. This is a big difference. I mean, over here we're talking about the Gechalim that have been sitting in the open Machata for quite some time, right? Because remember, we took the Gechalim, put in the Machata, put it down, and then we did the whole Avedas Adam, go back, bring the Ketores, and then do the rest of the Adam and the Echal, and so on. So, I mean, it was certainly not as hot as it was when we would take the Gecholim directly from the Mizbeach and go straight into the Heichal with it, and then in the Heichal do all of this. So, okay, I mean, it wasn't going to be that dangerous, but nonetheless, it makes sense. I mean, why would we want to start putting it closer and then have a flame bursting up, or certainly heat oxidation that was going on right under where you'd have to be spreading your arm in order to get to the other ones? I don't know how many of you have problems when you have to tell your wife, start the Neiras Shabbos from the furthest ones, not from the closest ones. But I have this conversation often. Anyway, so it's exactly the same kind of issue, right? The other reason, why would we say to do it the other way? Why would we want it start to be Tzovro next to him? That could be simply because of Ein Mavir Nala Mitzvahs. In other words, if I'm able to do the mitzvah now and I have the gecholim in front of me and I have a mitzvah to put the ketores on the gecholim, put them on the gecholim that are closest to you. Don't jump over it. Okay, so we have the two tanoim that gave us the two approaches. Excellent. And now...
Rabbi?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I have a balabatisha question and I'm a proxy for somebody else's balabatisha question, right? The Kohen came in, made a left, walked along the curtain, the Mishnah says, and now he puts things down and he goes out the same way he came in. Right. Nowhere does it say that he turned to face the Aron.
Not a balabatisha question. There's a lot of discussion about this. Some of the Rishonim say, and obviously he turned, because that's consistent with the piece that we just learned, Pnima lower chutzalo. If he didn't turn, what's Pnima lower chutzalo? So some of the Rishonim speak at Farish that he turned. Some of the Achronim say that he didn't turn and that we could still learn the Pnima lo chutzalo in terms of his position, but it's not a balabatisha question.